Bill Buckley, your host until 2, and Fevzi Turkalp, the Gadget Detective, is our next guest. You can follow him on Twitter. He's at Gadget Detective, and he always brings us up to date with one of the big stories about tech and also one of the gadgets he thinks is worthy of our attention. So hello again, Fevzi. Good to have you.
Hello, Bill.
And starting with your story of the week, and you've gone for the ever-pinging NHS COVID app. I was pinged myself, had to take a week off work, which was lovely for about 2 days, and then it became extremely tedious and cooped up feeling, and I wanted to be back here. And I am by no means alone.
Yeah, well, to appropriate an American phrase, thank you for your service, because, you know, you've done us all a good service by doing that.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, honestly, I think it's you know, that we talk a lot about our rights, I think, sometimes, and we don't think of our, you know, responsibilities to others. So, thank you for that anyway. So, the app, the NHS COVID-19 app, the pings have risen again. We're up to, in the week ending 21st of July, which is the latest week for which there is data, 689,313 people were pinged by the app. It's been dubbed the Pingdemic by those who don't think the app is a good idea. If you look at the figures for that period, that's about 3 people pinged for every person who tested positive, which seems entirely consistent to me, given that the main criteria is that the people who get pinged are the ones that have spent more than 15 minutes with a person in a 24-hour period within 2 metres. And, you know, so it's not, it's completely consistent that probably about 3 people over the number of days would have fallen into that category. If anything, it's a little bit low because, of course, not everyone has the app.
Yes, I was going to say, if anything, I would have thought it was a bit low. You say I did my service, and I'm glad I did, but I can understand, can't you, for several reasons, people not doing their service. I have a staff job. It won't have cost me any money. And frankly, I've got some savings. If I were a 0 hours contract minimum wage person, and I'd been double vaccinated, would you really blame me if I took a different view?
So it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, I would say that, you know, there is an argument to say that the government should be doing more than it is. I think there is some financial assistance available, but arguably it could be more. And easier to access, you know, because that's an investment. Because for every person with COVID that we keep out of infecting others, then you know, a few hundred pounds is a good investment for that, frankly. But it is an issue. And come the 16th of August, people won't be even advised to self-isolate. It will be suggested to them gently if they wouldn't mind getting a PCR test. You know, so it's... It is a tricky one. With all of this, there has to be a balance. I mean, the extreme case will be everyone stays at home always, irrespective of being pinged, because that's the safest thing to do. The other extreme is not to have the app and, you know, when you test positive, go around kissing everybody. But somewhere in between those two extremes is the right thing to do. And we need to strike the right balance. But I do just say that these people who call this a pingdemic and somehow suggests that the app is not doing its job. The app is doing exactly what it was designed to do. They've tweaked the criteria several times. And don't forget the counter cost of ignoring this and shutting down the app or telling people to ignore when they get pinged. The counterpoint of that is that that person, some proportion of those people who are pinged or would have been pinged, will get ill. They will infect many others, and that will cause far more disruption, more people at home. You know, because if each person's giving it to, you know, 3 people or more, then you know, you can see that it gets out of hand. And I notice also that, you know, the infection rates are, the statistics on the infection rates are dropping, and that's to be welcomed, although I don't think the figures yet reflect the latest easing on the 19th of July. But I also note that there's about a 14% drop in the number of tests being done. So if you were to do half as many tests, for example, you would find half as many positive results. So some of that drop is just because there's fewer tests being done.
Tell you another thing that occurred to me. You can't. It's very difficult, isn't it, if you're a government and you want to... give people hope and keep people on side by not doing all doom and gloom. But if you signpost that in only a couple of weeks' time, it'll just be suggested that you go and have a test, and if you've been double vaccinated, you can carry on as normal. People are obviously going to say, well, if it's going to be all right in 2 weeks, it's more or less all right now. I don't see how you ever square that circle, do you?
Absolutely. I mean, what they need to do is set out the criteria, which to some extent they've done, but ignored them in other cases. I mean, this idea of following the science, well, I don't think we hear them saying that much now. But instead of setting dates, if you set just the criteria that need to be met for certain things to happen, then in a way, then it just falls out of the decisions fall out of the data to a large extent. The problem is that this is not just about science. It's also about economics and it's also about politics. Politicians like to be, popular. And these are hard decisions. I mean, there's no getting away from that. But, there are certain decisions that you can look at and clearly see the effects. The fact that we knew about the Delta variant in March, but continue to let 43,000 people in from that country, is what's probably given us the peak now. So, it is a tricky one. But the answer to this, as I've said before, if you've got a wildfire jumping from house to house, the answer to it is not to take the batteries out of the smoke alarms. That's not really going to solve the problem.
That's a very good analogy. Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective, is with us. And on we go to Gadget of the Week. And this is the Marley Positive Vibration XL ANC. I haven't got a clue what you're talking about, Fibsy.
Okay, let's start with the Marley bit. So this is this is a pair of Bluetooth headphones, first of all, from the House of Marley, which is a brand that was created with the backing of Bob Marley's family. The idea behind it, and if you know, Positive Vibration is a Marley song. And all their products are named after Bob Marley songs. So hence that the Positive Vibration XLANC, the first bit we've explained. So, but the idea behind the Marley brand, and since its inception quite some years ago, is for it to be a sort of eco-conscious brand. They say that Marley stood for love of music and love of planet. So some of the profits go towards global reforestation projects, ocean preservation, that sort of thing. And in fact, if you look at the range of products, a lot of them have got wood and other natural materials in them. They're not completely made of that, but they kind of look nice, and they've got bits of types of wood in it, be it a turntable or in this case a pair of headphones. So that's about the brand and what it's all about. So when you buy these, you're doing your eco bit, as it were. So the rest of it, so it's the Marley Positive Vibration XLANC. The ANC bit stands for active noise cancelling. So this is a pair of headphones where the wearer doesn't want to hear noise from outside when they're listening to their music, and that can be either in their home if it's a somewhat noisy environment, but also particularly if they're out and travelling and in a noisy environment. Now, there are two forms of noise cancellation. One is passive, one is active. Passive noise cancellation is just using thick materials to create a barrier between the eardrum and the outside world. And, if you put your hands over your ears, that's passive noise cancellation. Active noise cancellation, which this uses, is much smarter. It uses a microphone on the outside to hear the sound that's hitting the headphones, and then it makes the opposite wave to cancel it out. So it turns the incoming sound into an electrical wave, and it then subtracts it effectively. It cancels that out and leaves you just with the music and not very much of the background noise. It uses a bit more battery life, but actually this is quite clever because the battery life on these headphones, because they are rechargeable, if you've got the active noise cancellation off, you get a whopping 32 hours of use. Even with it switched on, you get 26 hours, which is excellent. That means you can take it out for the day and have absolutely no worries that it's you're going to need to recharge it. If you do need to recharge it, it's got a USB-C connector, which is the modern type of USB, which can deliver more current. So even a 15-minute charge can give you 2 hours of playtime. Listening time. It's a big over-the-ear design, and it's very comfortable. They use memory foam ear cushions, and they are comfortable. And the drivers inside it, the actual little speakers, if you like, in the headphones, are 4 centimetres in diameter each, which is quite huge. And that reflects in the good bass response. The Bluetooth is Bluetooth 5, which is, you know, the latest generation of Bluetooth. And what that means is it uses less battery. That's why you've got partly why you've got the long battery life, but it also much better connection, higher quality, fewer dropouts due to it being a wireless design. So I enjoy that about it. I also enjoy that although the headphones are quite bulky, they've got this sort of fold-away design where the ear cups can fold in and you pop it in the bag that they provide, and it's easier to sort of travel with it. It doesn't take up quite as much space. So all in all, pretty good. Not cheap. They are $149.99 is the list price. I looked up on Amazon. That's what they were selling it for as well. I went to the House of Marley website, which is thehouseofmarley.com, and I noticed that they're doing a deal, I think, for the first-time customers. They're knocking off 10%. So,
oh,
you know,
15 quid.
Yeah, you get it for 135 quid, essentially. 4 stars out of 5. The sound quality is good. It's quite a cool-looking pair of headphones. They've got the nice little wooden inset panels in them. I think they look quite nice. And they come in black, but they also come in a sort of more pinkish colour, which is, you know, if that's your thing, you can go for that. 4 stars out of 5. A very good gadget. And actually, it's worth having a look at their website, because it's quite interesting just to see their bookshelf speakers and their turntables and all the wood.
I was going to ask you, have you got any of the names of their other products then, where they've managed to shoehorn a song title into the description?
It's a good idea.
That'd be good fun, wouldn't it? Do they make blackcurrant conserve? Because, of course, that could be We're Jamming, I was thinking. But they probably don't make conserve, because it doesn't really fit very well with electronics, does it? But
There's a bag of rhythm audio system. There's a Get Together MIDI portable Bluetooth speaker. There's a No Bounds XL Bluetooth speaker. There's a Chance Sport Beat Bluetooth portable speaker. So, you know, all the products are, I think pretty much all of them are named after Bob Marley songs. So it's kind of like a quiz as well.
I think they missed a trick with the jam there, but there we are. thank you very much, Fevzi. Great to talk to you. We will talk in 7 days' time, no doubt. Fevzi Turkalp is the Gadget Detective.